Hey, welcome to
That Time on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour. For about the next 60 minutes, you have reached the one, the only, the legendary K. Thompson live show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am the son, also known as Eric Payne, Citizen Payne to some of you on the social networks, and you are a lady.
Hello, everyone. I'm K. Thompson, and welcome to K. Thompson Live. Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot of information to give you tonight, and we're going to be getting right to it while we waiting for Wayne Gilman, co-host, Eric Payne, and producer, and Wayne Gilman, formerly news director of WLIV-BLS Radio in New York, where I used to work. And we have a lot of information to, you know, tell you about, a lot of things that I've been listening to on television and following, you know, trying to make out what the stock market is all about. But we're going to talk about, too, you know, just recently, the Washington, D.C. Congressional Black Caucus. And, Eric, you're going to be talking about that in a minute because you were there and you're playing a key role, I understand. Also, the Newark International Film Festival was an enormous success. And Eric, you played a great role in that, you and Lisa Payne. So it was the Newark International Film Festival from September 9th to 11th, and it was quite successful. It was dedicated to the art of storytelling through film. The city of Newark has a rich history, as many of you probably know or don't know, of fostering great artists and innovators who have created definite works. And they had expected to bring approximately 30,000 people to the city of Newark during the three-day festival. And I can tell you right now, it was more than that, and it was very, very successful. And so it was a kickoff reception. And for the festival, it was a three-day festival and a showcase of the breadth of the film industry, you know, including screenings of a number of cultural and anchor institutions and outdoor screening, weather permitting, stunt exhibitions, pitch opportunities and auditions for TV and film, acting, directing, producing, and crowdfunding workshops. Eric, how about telling us about that? Because you were right involved in it.
Okay, that was really good. The film festival takes place every year. It was the first week between the 9th to 11th of 2016. But let's talk about what I'd like to talk about first before we get off into this is the news of the day. The stuff that's most pressing here, and this week we had two more black men shot dead in the street, one by an African-American police officer and one by a female police officer, white female police officer in Tulsa, which was caught on videotape on the dash cam as well as the helicopter cam. And the one in at least in Tulsa, seems that even Donald Trump, who made an appearance at a black church today, I believe in Ohio, at that pastor, semi-pastor guy, his church, who he looks like another, I would call him something else, but I'm not going to do it on our radio show. But he made an appearance today, and even Donald Trump agreed that this woman, he didn't know what she was thinking. Mm. And perhaps she choked, and perhaps if she's going to be that type of person that can't handle that situation, I'm paraphrasing now, that perhaps she shouldn't be in that job. And that's one of the very few things that I agree with Donald Trump, and he got a round of applause from, I assume, was a predominantly black audience, but I don't know for sure. The wide shot before that particular press conference or gathering took place, there seemed to be a rather mixed crowd, more so from what I was seeing, back of the heads only, that I assume might have been white people. But I believe it was at this black pastor's church, so it probably was a diverse group of people that he was talking to. So even Trump agrees that at least the shooting in Tulsa is something that seems somewhat fishy. And also the fact by this woman's microphone that you can hear as her, she's saying, asking, you can clearly see on tape that the guy has his hands up in the air.
Yeah.
But you hear her say, I can't see his hands. Well, unfortunately for her, you can see his hands, and she was lying. And there was a shot not only from one of the dash cams, but also from the helicopter. And you could hear the helicopter, the brief snip of tape that I saw and heard, you can hear the helicopter cop say, well, he's got his hands up now, and he's doing exactly what she says. And I'm paraphrasing there, too. But, you know, this is the issue. This is the problem in the United States. Is it something that's new? I don't think it's anything that's new. The only thing that's new is the technology that enables it to be caught on film and documented. And so the one in Charlotte seems a little bit more suspect. The cops, of course, claimed the gentleman had a gun. And the community, and from what the few things I've heard, Mom, you've probably been watching the news a little bit closer, the various news broadcast a little closer than I have today. But from what I've seen, which was a woman who either was the gentleman's sister or daughter, said that he didn't have anything. And I heard that other people said that he used to wait to pick up his son every day at this spot. So yet again, we have two more killings this time that have been documented, because Charlotte is uprising because they said this has been an ongoing problem. The other ones we just haven't been hearing about. So, and like I said, Don King, good old Uncle Don King, went with Donald Trump to this black church where he used the N-word in describing something that he was talking about. You're still basically, he was telling people that if you're a rich Negro, you're still a rich Negro. If you're a poor Negro, you're still a poor Negro. And he said, if you're sliding and gliding, you're still sliding and gliding. And he used the N-word in front of a mixed crowd. And what struck me was not only were some of the people were laughing, but really to the left of Don King, a couple of white gentlemen, and they seemed to get a real big kick out of him using that word. Laughing a little bit too much to me when you're in mixed company, when you don't know how other people are going to react. But that's just my opinion. And also, we have the first presidential debate next week is going down. Mm-hmm. Hillary and Trump are going to be debating out at Hofstra University in New York. I think Hofstra might be in Long Island, so that's going to be the first of the presidential debates. Oh, let me get Mr. Wayne Gilman in here, because I know you've got some juicy things to say. Hello, Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Good evening, Dr. Eric Payne, and I heard you waxing today's news like poetry, and good evening, Kay. How are you both?
Fine, thank you. How are you, Wayne? Everything is good here.
It's good to know that something is good somewhere, because every time I look at the paper or turn on the computer and I watch TV and I get sick to my stomach. It really bothers me what's going on out here. And I didn't get a chance to see the Don King piece. I heard about it, and I can't believe that he went there. But then again, you know, Don King is known for his promotion. I just hope it don't work this time.
Well, let's consider, all black people know to consider the source when you're talking about Don King. So,
yeah.
We expect that type of buffoonery from him. Buffoonery is what got him paid. And, you know, judging his background, obviously he's an individual who's willing to do anything to make money. And, you know, got to give it to him. He succeeded in the fight game, which sometimes there were claims of a little bit of racism within that game, as suspect as that can be. But we expect that from Don King. What else do you expect? That's why we don't take him too seriously. I mean, for me, it's the pastor and these other black people that keep wanting to give Donald Trump a pass, and I don't care what he says. I personally like Donald Trump. I like him on TV on The Apprentice. That's the only place I like him. I like to see him on TV on The Apprentice, and he's a great entertainer, and God bless him. But I sure don't want him to see any type of elected official or anything like that. And I'm just really baffled at some of these black people. Obviously, there's some sort of financial gain for them. This particular pastor I'm talking about, who reminds me of a street person that he might have been reformed that decided to become a pastor. I'm not going to say what the profession was, but I'm sure a lot, if you think about it, people, let's say it was similar to what the Mac did. I'll just leave it at that. If you know the movie, you know what I'm talking about. And that brother, to me, talks like the Mac talks sometimes. So, and of course, the Mac was dealt in sales to a certain degree, and this guy is selling Donald Trump to his black constituents. Or his black congregants. Remarkable, isn't it? You wanted to say something, Mom?
I did. I'm kind of lost it right now. But I wanted to say about the officer that was involved with and was involved. The officer that shot the man who was walking toward his car with his arms up was a female, a white female. And she shot him, and I don't even know what happened after that. But anyway, I know that she's going to be investigated, I would hope. And so much stuff, happening out there. But anyway, you know one thing I wanted to say? I was taking out some notes about, you know, the world. One-fifth of the world is Africa. And they've been talking about, you know, this is about, you know, some of the people in the stock market. And then they were saying how, you know, North Africa has, you know, so many people, and it's strength, and it has a lot of money with it. And there's over 2 million people displaced in northern Nigeria. And they were talking about Boko Raton, you know, where the ladies were, the young girls were, you know, captured and kidnapped. And Nigeria, with over $200 million, their money situation must not fail. They were saying that, you know, the United States is, you know, really looking at about African countries and the, what the money is worth. So that's going to be interesting. I'm trying to, you know, really, you know, stay up to date with that. But anyway, so also, let me see, micro-lending. What is micro-lending? Why is that a big potential in the stock market? So, but anyway, let's get back to, you know, newbies.
Let's talk about
this. Yeah, we are.
Let's talk about the bottom.
Well, the one thing... I just wanted to piggyback on what Eric was saying earlier, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I, you know, our community is not a monolith, and we come from all different shapes, sizes, backgrounds. And,
right.
you know, it, and I agree with you, Eric, that, you know, it sickens me that we have to, you know, go down to perhaps to the point of just clear, for lack of a better word, stupidity. That there are people out there who will promote a certain agenda, only primarily to line their pockets, and they don't see the big picture. You know, they really, you know, this is such a critical election going on, and to think that some of the most astute, politically empowered people from the Republican Party are seeing it for what it's worth and are beginning to consider saying that they're going to vote for the Democrat standard bearer speaks volumes about what's, you know, what the party's come to and basically, you know, what Donald Trump is all about. I don't know what it's going to take, and I really question this sudden rise in poll numbers that he keeps reporting that, you know, his African-American poll numbers are up. I don't know what he is referring to other than maybe some inside marketing tallying machine that perhaps only his staff has put together. I mean, there's been no legitimate polling outfit that has basically said there's been an upsurge in the vote amongst people of color. And if there has been a surge, it has been benefiting Hillary Clinton. But, you know, from what we see, the numbers are close, only because when you factor in third party candidates in this contest, there are many people out there who are very, very unhappy with the fact that Bernie Sanders did not get the nod.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate that I don't know why they would want to sacrifice a vote that really will not mean anything and it could benefit the other side. Or and then there's some who say that it could benefit the Democrats. I don't know.
I know those polls you're talking about, the most recent polls have Hillary with a slight advantage, about 6 points in certain areas.
Right.
But polls are interesting, I find, but I'm pretty sure that the majority of the time that they do these polls, unless it's a poll about black people, they don't really poll black people, you know?
Exactly.
Black people do, I don't know many people except nowadays the surveys, get online, email, stuff like that. But I really don't, you know, I don't put as much stock in these polls saying, you know, black people are thinking this. I mean, unless you're talking to black people, but the majority of time we have a broad poll about all Americans, all likely voters. I don't think within that number of likely voters or whatever that they include a large number of African Americans, simply because there's probably not that many African Americans that are in the polling business. And if they're not specifically, if some of us aren't specifically in certain businesses, and then I don't think the dominant culture, certainly it's been proof that whites don't that have these certain businesses, I'm going to think about to call black people. I'm reminded of the TV shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about a TV show that's number one. Well, the TV show might be. That's why certain TV shows are number one in white community and white households, and certain other shows are number one in black households because we're watching different things. And unless you have producers saying, hey, black people watch TV too, if you want to sell all those paper towels and those napkins and that toilet paper, I might suggest you make a black TV show that you could put these commercials on
yeah.
and sell them to black people. But it takes someone who has to be of that group to consider that group. Because what history has shown us thus far is that the dominant culture has just kind of clumped in the needs of certain of particular segments of society with the mass society. The needs of black people haven't really been paid attention to by a lot of these white producers of shows or white manufacturers of products, other than the fact that the blacks were part of the society as a whole. But when we talk about pinpointing and getting a targeted demographic and targeted marketing, it's just recently, within the last 20, 30 years, become something that they've noticed that the black consumer will do this and that and making certain shows and things geared towards what they want. So I don't think that the polls, from that perspective, really, unless they're reaching out to black people, they're probably not as well thought out, so to speak. And you wanted to say, Martha?
Yeah, because, you know, that's okay, you know. But also I want to say that you know, remember that Trump has been reaching out to the black churches, you know, and he has been, in some occasions, giving money to the black churches. As a matter of fact, you know, when he had given a large amount of money to Southern Church, and, of course, they were happy to receive the money, and they were going to be, you know, politicking for Trump, mainly because of the fact that he is buying the vote. So there you have it. And some of the black churches are going for it, and it's really embarrassing, and they should not be doing that, and they know better. But anyway, you know, money does talk to some people.
Well, I think it sounds a double message. I mean, but I agree with you, and again, Eric, in just commenting on what you said, I know of what you speak of with respect to the media. I'm old enough to remember, you know, not to even bring back the history of what we went through at WLIB, but, you know, there was a time when we started working there that they wouldn't even advertise Ivory soap because there was a perception that we never, you know, cleaned ourselves, you know? I mean, and it was really, really offensive to think that here it is, a station that was primarily geared to the black community in New York City, and at the time didn't even have the kind of visibility that it did before it was sold. Just you couldn't get the Madison Avenue by because, you know, we weren't perceived as a group that washed ourselves or brushed our teeth. But I'd like to think there are some legitimate outfits like the Pew Research Center and Quinnipiac College up in Connecticut. I mean, people like those organizations, I think, you know, they will do a sampling. But then again, I have to go back to what you said earlier, Arbitron used to have a method of measuring radio station market share that was totally unscientific, and they would just go out and send samples for people to little questionnaires for people to fill out, pay them $5, and it was never really a fair representation of how many people were listening. And of course, they've changed that since then, but. Again, there's really no way of knowing, but the fact that...
Whatever happened to Arbitron?
It still exists. I mean, that was the marketing tool, just like Nielsen is for television. They're still around, but they have a completely different way of measuring audience mass, and they call it the people meter reading or something to that effect. I've forgotten, and forgive me if someone far more exposed to that, because I've stepped away from that for so long now. I don't pay attention to it, and social media certainly had an impact. But going back in the day, you know, your livelihood was predicated on what numbers you pulled in, and, you know, it was just one of those things. I mean, there was a time, and it was just blatant racism that you knew
right.
everyone in New York was listening to WLIB at a particular
That's
time
right.
because your competition was talking about what they heard down the dial. The minute your
yeah.
mother would get off the air, her competitor would come on and talk about, well, you know, so-and-so had this person on and that person on, and they were talking about
exactly.
this case and that case. So,
right.
you know, if you get the cross-promotion that way, and callers who are listening to the programming on LIB would call back on ABC or OR, you know, to me it's a done deal. You know,
Inner city broadcasting was pretty powerful. What happened to it?
That's another story. And I don't want to be questioned. Or, you know, I think we have more problems to solve tonight than to go back into history.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a beautiful organization, and unfortunately, like a lot of our institutions, you know, it was sold,
right.
and that was that.
Right. I just don't want us to get sidetracked with some of these other things. I want
yeah.
to keep us close to the conversation that we're having. And you know, like you were talking about the sampling of people, right? When you mentioned someone being sampled and someone paying someone $5. Well, let's just break it down. It's like, okay, I'm in charge of doing the sampling. I get the job. I work for Arbitron or I work for Nielsen. I'm like, okay, we need to put some some of these Nielsen boxes in some white homes, Eric. Okay, get out and put some in some Hispanic homes. Okay,
yeah.
I'm in charge of Nielsen. I need to put some into Hispanic. I'm in charge of the whole Nielsen thing. I need to find whites, Hispanics. But what happens if I don't know any Hispanics? What happens if I don't know any whites? Well, I know the few. I might know my neighbor, so I'll say, hey, neighbor, here, put this Nielsen box. On. Hey, Bob, do you want to do me a favor? So this is what happens when at the Nielsen's you get the white guy who's in charge placing him in homes. Who does he know that's black?
Mm.
You know, so I mean, the one or two, that's and really, that's how the jobs get done. You know, when people have jobs to do, it's like your mailman. Well, you get a new mailman, and he doesn't know the route. He doesn't know that if I go to Kay Thompson's, I need to put her mail in the left mailbox, the right mailbox. He's just going to put it in the box, right? So what I'm saying
right.
is the person, the actual, when someone throws a lever, it's the actual gear that does the work.
Yeah.
And whatever person is representative of the gear, if they're not doing the work correctly, then the whole job falls apart. It's like the administration of law and order and justice. Well, the final
mm-hmm.
aspect of the art, where the boot hits the ground of doing of providing law and order is with the cop, right? So Congress passes the laws. We all say go enforce that law on the state level. The person that enforces the law is the actual cop. So out in the street, he is the law.
Uh-huh.
He is the one who is judge, can be judge and jury if he so decides. So what happens is some of these people are deciding to be judge and jury. That's
right.
how you end up with some people getting shot
mm-hmm.
wrongly because they looked the person. Well, if someone looks the way, you have a protocol that you're supposed to follow when these certain things are happening. So it's really up to the person who is administering that law to follow that protocol. They can choose to deviate because their supervisor is not out there with them. It's like they talk about body cameras, right? Body cameras. But how we don't know, who turns the body camera on? Is the body camera
right.
automatically turned on from the station house so the cop can't turn it off in between those circumstances when he does something shady? Who has control of the body cam? You understand what I'm saying? So if I can as a police officer turn off my body cam when I get into an office, choose to turn it on and off when I decide,
mm-hmm.
I'm basically editing what's going on, aren't I? Because
exactly.
it's not uncut. It's not like when you watch a movie or you watch a crime scene or the news, it's uncut.
Yeah.
It's happening as it, and you're seeing it as it happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's why social media and the internet is so devastating to people who want to do wrong. That's why you have live stream and all these other live streaming sites where you will see it as it's happening. So they don't get to cut out the little bad parts, you know. When Don
yeah.
King uses the N-word, it's not leaked out. You're hearing him use the N-word. When Donald Trump talks about beating up protesters, that's live. It's not edited.
Mm.
But when you ask a police officer, when they talk about these body cams, it's always been my question, Well, who determines when you turn the body cam on and off? Is it going to be the cop? Because then if it's going to be the cop, decide to turn his body cam off when he's running after a suspect and turn it off when he gets ready to shoot him and turn it back on and the guy's laying on the ground and with a gun on his hand that he does. We don't know what happened in between that time.
Mm-hmm.
So whose responsibility is it? And I also want to
That's a salient point, Eric. It's something I never thought about. You know, I thought it was a good idea, a good concept. But, you know, you're absolutely right. They're still judge and jury.
Yeah, and
they're the ones calling the shots.
That's when it comes into training. That's when it comes into. We have a lot of things going on here with the black cop and now with the white cop. Two examples: one with African American killed African American, one white killed African American.
Yeah.
So what it comes down to, I think, is training in one circumstance, but also bias in another. Now, was this woman biased, inherently biased, towards African-American people? And those very polls you're showing, that some polls came out where after Hillary said, talk about half of Donald Trump's supporters are deplorable because they're racist, homophobic, xenophobic,
mm-hmm.
all these things. And the whole uproar was that she said half. Well, I was watching one of the news shows, and they had Reuters did a study about what the majority of Trump supporters think about African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually about 46% on the average, that 46% across the board in these various different areas, they were asked these various different questions like, do you think blacks are more prone to commit crime? Well, about 42% of Trump supporters said that. Do you think blacks are lazy? Well, about 43%, 45% of Trump supporters felt
mm-hmm.
that. All these negative things. So it wasn't quite half. It was just under half. It was about 5% under half. So basically it was half. Half of your supporters do have harbored negative images, negative perspectives about black people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an inherent bias thing. Now, are they doing that because they were brought up in a racist household and they were brought up to be junior Klan members? Or are they doing that because they believe what society has projected upon them about black people and they just don't know any black people? Or then you also have the group that do know one or two black people, and they exclude their one or two black friends from that group of bad, from that negative opinion that they might have about the whole black people. So all of these things need to be discussed. You know, when we talk about, when someone like Hillary comes out and says that 50% of his supporters are deplorable, first people are going to get insulted because they never think they're racist, and they just think their way of life is better, and that's the way it's always been in America.
Exactly.
It's always been better. But can you really blame someone who's brought up in a society like that, has been brainwashed to think that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's why people take people on their individual merit. I always thought that when we moved to Maplewood, moved out of Newark, I never had the negative thing about all white people, even though we moved out of Newark shortly after the riots, the uprising, because of the racial issues in our country at the time. But you got to take each person individually. And that's what we need to get to in this country and not have and break up these stereotypes, these negative images that people have, this inherent bias. And then the reason why it affects us as black people so much because we're not in the power position in that bias dichotomy, in that bias relationship. We are the one that the bias is going against, so therefore we're the brunt of all these aggressive actions.
The recipients.
Right. Go ahead, Wayne. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say I agree with you, Eric. I mean, it's hard, you know. You don't want to paint with a broad stroke and then feel that you know it is what it is. I mean, just in the last couple of days, I was having some work done in one of my properties, and I happened to go to an electrical supply store, and I was only one of color in the store. Well, there might have been a Latino, and the guy that was doing the work for me was of Asian descent, but Indian, Caribbean Indian. And the deal is there was a guy at the counter who was talking to the owner's wife of this electrical supply store. And, you know, he was talking about the whole issue about what the police are not doing. And I overheard him say, because I got to the point where I guess when I walked in, he wanted to get my attention. And it just got to the point where he said so many critical things about Obama that I was just forced, you know, and I know I was raised right. You don't discuss politics, religion, and sex, you know, with people you don't know. But it was almost like he was just asking for it and just recognized me, and I had to turn around and stop him and basically explain, you know, what this man has done and why we are where we are today. And, you know, he's a Republican. He probably will still vote Trump because he, you know, expressed his desires to do that. But in further discussion with this gentleman, I come to find out it was a local story in the Westchester County area where his kid was shot to death. He had a promising career, a baseball college scholarship, and he was shot to death alongside I-87 about a year ago by some kids from the Bronx, kids of color. And again, right away it's a racial thing because his kid was gunned down by someone of color. And, you know, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I'm just saying, well, what happens when you juxtapose that with a black who's going through the same thing, you know? And it's just one of those things. It's like, why must it always be race? Why could it be a situation where he held up your kid? Your kid was in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to hear about how some of his best friends were black, and in his building he has all sorts of people. It's like the UN. And the minute I hear that conversation, it just comes up with a stereotypical assessment of what this person's character is all about. Not to say that he really understands the black culture or the culture that we come from and what we live in. He just feels that he's okay because he has one or two people who communicate with him, and he feels, well, all right, well, I'm not prejudiced. I got, you know. But deep down inside, everything else you heard coming from his mouth, you know, was racist. I mean, and said some deplorable things about our president, you know, and I know he did this for a reason. But by the time I left there, I know I had an impact because I guess he didn't think that I would come out. I don't know what he was expecting. As I said, we're not a monolith. Maybe he felt that I was coming from the South Bronx with a lot of D's and Dems and Does and all that crap. But the bottom line is that there is just as much ignorance and stupidity in those circles. And I live behind a very prominent Catholic college here, and I don't want to call the name, but if you see the volumes of kids who are white coming from all parts of the country and the way they carry on, that if their behavior occurred in a predominantly black neighborhood, we would have been locked up. They would have been locked up, you know? But somehow, and this is my problem with what goes on with law enforcement in a lot of these places, including Charlotte, the policewoman shooting the black guy in Ohio, you know, it's like they just see things from a completely different perspective. It is a culture issue within the blue, the race of blue, you know? And that's it. They feel that they're above every time there's an incident with these college students here, again, I look up in amazement and I see the patience these cops have because they know somebody's son and daughter is connected to some senator or some congressman or some judge, and they don't want to be held accountable for it. But if it were one of us, Eric and Kay, we would have been locked up and throw the key away. You talk about stop and frisk, that would have gone on first before they even come to a legitimate, you know, question. And I've seen it, and it bothers me that that goes on, and I'm tired of it. You know, it's like we always got to pay a tax, you know, for somebody else's ignorance. And it should be, and I'm hoping that once Hillary gets in there, and I know during the fundraiser the other day with Congressman Payne I mentioned, there's got to be some uniformity in the freaking law that it applies to everybody in every state. That's the problem.
But wasn't,
wasn't
Trump also talking about bringing back stop and frisk?
Stop and frisk, exactly, because he's got Giuliani in his hip pocket. He doesn't know.
Yeah, of all
people. You know, he's so.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't want to call the man a name, but, you know, it's just
go
the
ahead.
Ignorance.
It
You're talking about Giuliani. You know, sometimes people's minds, that's what happens when people, you know, you're inbred, you know. Giuliani is probably, I think he's his own cousin, right?
No,
yeah. But I mean,
no, he
you know, he's a little
he
bit
married his cousin. I'd like to marry one of mine, but
Rudy's a little bit nutty. I mean, we know that. Rudy is a little bit racist.
Yeah.
He carries a racial bias. I think that you said within the race of blue, but it's really within within the white community that there's a certain amount of racism and prejudice and bias. And as I said, there's all reasons for it. The thing is that once you know better, then you're supposed to do better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only those that aren't seeking to do better or that really don't see it or really refuse to change have trouble seeing that. And then it becomes compounded by the fact you're then in blue. And as we know, at one time it was pretty much illegal to be black and free in the United States, and the police officer enforced the law. So they would be the paddy rollers and go in and get the escaped slaves and things like that. So this is,
mm-hmm.
the United States is a culture of supremacy over one race over the other, the dominant white race over people of color. And Donald Trump said it, and I agree with him on the fact that let's stop being politically correct. Let's stop being politically correct and let's say it like it is. Well, that's the way it is. If you look at the history of the United States, the indigenous people that were here first have been relegated to reservations.
Yeah.
And they were murdered off intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the next colored people, or the darkest colored people, African Americans, were made slaves and property. Okay? So the Hispanics were negatively portrayed. And California used to be Mexico. So,
right.
You know, there's a thing that some of them, that there was a quote in one of the movies I saw where some Mexican gentleman said, "We didn't move across the border moved across us." You know, people in California, sometimes people want to wonder why there's so many Mexicans. Well, it used to be Mexico. That's why.
Exactly.
You know? And these are things that might be politically incorrect to say out loud, but that them's the truth. And we don't want to confuse anybody with facts, at least your head explode. But this is what happens when you become a little bit more enlightened, a little bit more understanding. And I think that realizing that would help a lot of white Americans, too, to realize it's not, you know, when you talk about slavery, I think that some and the mistreatment of black people in the United States, I think a lot of people, a lot of white people feel guilty and they get defensive, feeling that I can only imagine if I were in their shoes. So let me put a preface what I'm saying by saying that. But I can imagine if I were in that position, I would feel defensive. I would feel a little guilty. I would feel like I had to say, well, I'm not that way. And that's what you hear a lot of times when you talk about slavery. Some white people will say, well, I never enslaved anybody. My family never enslaved anybody.
Yeah.
And you're right. You're right about that. That's true. But you are the beneficiary of a system that has promoted that,
mm-hmm.
a system that has promoted the supremacy of one race over the other. You're a beneficiary of that. It might not seem that way to you, and it's hard for some Caucasians who are struggling just as much as any black person or Hispanic person, any person of color. And it might not seem that way to them. But there was a saying at one time, you know, you're still a white man in America.
Yeah.
It meant that they were still better than a person of color. It's better than a black, Hispanic, Asian. So there needs to be that understanding brought about. I mean, we can go get mad and get angry and rip off angry posts and put stuff like that, but we need to have some sort of understanding. Hopefully those that are willing to understand can understand. Another thing I'd like to talk about, politics, people talking about Hillary, Donald Trump, and neither of them, they want to vote for neither of them. Let me stress this, anybody that listens to us, black people can't afford that luxury of not voting.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Or deciding not to show up because Bernie's not there, or to vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. I'm sure they're both great people. We can't afford that luxury. Other people can if they choose, but we can't afford that luxury. And a lot of times people talk about, well, I don't like the choices. Guess what? Politics usually comes down to sometimes the lesser of two evils. And that's something that we as African Americans had to know and had to come to realize and deal with that reality since probably the beginning of when we first started being able to vote. Just when Barack Obama or Jesse Jackson ran, or Shirley Chisholm, I think, when she ran, that gave us the choice to vote for the people that we wanted to. But every other scenario, it's usually been about the lesser of two evils for people of color.
Exactly.
And that's politics. That's what I know.
And in a way, it's going back to that, not to cut you off, Eric, but in a small way, it's sort of like going back to that again, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's going back. I think it's always been that way because that's what they do. They whittle it down to two people. So eventually, your odds are that your particular person that you support 100% is not going to get in there. So then what's your choice? Are you going to go with the choice that – what are two choices? That's what happens
right.
when stuff gets whittled down. That's like, you know, it's like sports. You get to the championship, people get whittled down. The competition weeds out everybody. Then you must
right.
choose between those two choices. So they talk about politics, that's a misnomer. That's a distraction to say people don't like the choice. I don't like the choice, so I'm not going to vote. Really? Because
well, we can't afford that.
You know, certain people that look like us don't have that luxury.
Right.
And other people that don't look like us, that happen to be white or other races, whether you choose to vote or not, it's still going to affect your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You might as well
yeah.
get in there and try to have it affect some way positively. And hopefully it will be for the person who's going to do things for the broadest cross-section of people. Because the broadest cross-section of people are not the top 1%, not the multimillionaires or the billionaires. It's the hardworking people that will go to work every day, you know. And we need to be educated enough and elevated enough not to believe the whole kind of divide and conquer perspective and theme that certain parties have been pushing, that Donald Trump's election has been pushing, you know. It's just now when things start getting tight, first, you know, he solidified his base. Right? You solidify your base by talking bad about the minority people. One of the first things just talked about how Mexicans were rapists coming across the border. If that's how this guy starts off, you know, I mean, you really tell us basically.
He's not about to change.
He's going to corral all those people first, and then I'm going to reach out just enough to get that number. He's not trying to reach out to a lot of black people, but just enough to win the election. And then see what happens.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see the debate, too, you know, I mean, how he handled himself. Because I still maintain, again, not to cut you off, I feel that he's going to get into this whole bully pulpit character, you know, just trying to beat up on Hillary. And I, you know, again, I'm not saying that she can't defend herself. Obviously, she's preparing herself for any kind of an attack. But the bottom line is, you know, it's just unfortunate how this guy has been successful against his own party, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just have to wait and see what happens next week.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting. Let's get to the young man who was the bombing in New York, also he was from Elizabeth. And I know Elizabeth quite well, and then I know exactly where he was found. And so that's too close for comfort.
I was a little taken back by that myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it really, where they caught him was actually in Linden, which is right next door to Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Right.
So I mean, it's something to be concerned about. You know, here's this guy living right in our midst. You know, we know a lot about Elizabeth, New Jersey. And he decided to go over to New York. You know, people get fed up with a system, and some of these people from other parts of the world probably are fed up with what they're able to see, what they perceive that the United States is doing to them domestically. We have a citizenry that's fed up with the treatment that they've received, people of color. The more that we have this strife, the more I believe it creates a fertile ground for those people who really start hating their country to go and join these negative forces and become domestic terrorists or foreign-born terrorists. I mean, Timothy McVeigh was a domestic terrorist. He was the one who bombed the building during the Clinton administration. One of the most devastating bombings in this country after 9/11. But
a huge building.
He was a domestic terrorist. Yep. Born and bred in the United States and had some ties to some racist beliefs, at least. So, you know, we have to be just as vigilant about individuals who become disgruntled with the United States and their government. I'm thinking about the recent standoff out there in the Midwest where these guys were coming and joining up with these people about grazing rights and things like that out there, and where the gentleman got killed about 4 or 5 months ago who was trying to go to battle with the government authorities. So there are those that are domestic terrorists that somehow believe that their way of life and things that they've known all their life is changing, and they somehow think that it's Obama's fault that it is like that, and really are not willing to learn anything. And really, I think maybe some of these people are tone deaf to the facts, and they've got their mind made up about certain things, and that's just the way it's going to be. And no facts are going to change how they did, because if you did, you would see the facts that it was George W. Bush who was running the country into the ground. We were on the brink of the worst recession, almost another depression. But when Barack Obama came in office,
mm-hmm.
he saved the
saved
the car industry. And now mm-hmm. they're talking about how the annual index, you know, the average American household, their income has gone up 5% or something like that. The most it's gone up in about 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if you listen to these people talking about the economy's bad and this and that, you know, I was watching Mike Pence on an interview the other day talking about we need to get the economy running again. He was in Congress when George Bush was president.
Go there. Exactly.
He was one of the people that the economy was being run into the ground when he was there.
Right.
I spoke to a friend from Indiana. She said, yeah, we want to get rid of him. We're hoping he gets elected. I was like, oh, no, y'all. I don't want to. She's like, sorry, y'all. Well, if that gets him out of Indiana.
Oh, God.
You know, but, I mean, this is the thing. They change. I mean, we're talking about people who make up the truth. They make up stuff.
Exactly.
They make up. The economy wasn't doing bad. Like Rudy said, what did Rudy say? There was the attack recently said something about America hasn't been attacked. Something happened with Obama and said that was the first time America was attacked. We haven't had an attack. This is the first time America's been attacked like this since Nicole during the Clinton administration. People were like, what about
9/11?
Super mayor, remember?
Yeah.
So they're willing
yeah.
to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to
right.
make up.
And that was like so blurring because he wanted to continue his administration. He wanted to extend his administration a third term, you know, because of the horrific attack New York was under at the end of his term, political
right.
career in office.
But apparently,
there, you know?
Apparently he wasn't that good. Apparently he really, even though you were a mayor of the country, for that time and your time was up, Rudy. Apparently he wasn't really that good, was he? Because
no,
if
he wasn't,
he would definitely would have gotten a third term.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Just like Donald
yeah.
Trump. Yeah, just like Donald Trump talking about, you know, when he came out and had to admit that Barack Obama was a citizen and tried to say, hurry, let's hurry up and get back. And Hillary was really the one that started, and I finished it. How you finish something that you already knew was the truth?
I tell you.
And he finished it because he went around in a big old circle. He found out the same thing that was true when he started telling that lie.
Right,
you know what I'm
right,
talking about. And these old house Negroes want to have him in their church and act like he's their friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just that alone, you're absolutely right. I mean, the deal is that they are who you say they are. I mean, Donald Trump should be apologizing to Obama for having conducted such a scurrilous campaign during the course of his presidency. And I know that won't happen. That's beneath Donald Trump to come out. And I was shocked. I mean, I guess it must have been for shock value that he finally said, you know, oh, yes, he's a born American and that's it. It's final. You know, I finished it. I mean, God, it's just offensive the way he carries on, and no one really takes him to task. You hear about it on occasion, and then right away when he reacts to what other people are saying, oh, that's the liberal white press or the liberal press, and that's it. Those are Democrats that favor, you know, Hillary, and he gives nothing to acknowledging the impact of what his scurrilous conversation has been publicly for years about Obama, you know, to
he
the
knows
point
what
where
he's doing.
Yeah, exactly,
he knows
it's part of an
doing.
Agenda. You're absolutely right,
yeah.
Kate. It's part of an agenda, you know?
He's
not like
stupid
you don't
and
know.
Then a jerk, but he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, that's right. You're right, Mike. He's a jerk, but he's not that stupid. He's stupid, but he ain't crazy. He knows exactly what he's doing. If you look at these little tactics that they use these tactics mm-hmm. you put in place when Karl Rove was George Bush's brain, you know? Accuse the other side of doing this exact thing that you're doing. That was one of their foundations. And also, if you watch all of these people that are speaking from the conservative right side, what they will do when they engage in a conversation with someone who's more liberal is that they'll speak, and then when the liberal person starts to speak, they'll interrupt them. And they will continue to do that. You know why? What they've learned, and you guys know this as well as I do, when you're on TV or when you're in a radio station and two people are speaking into the mic at the same time, what happens? You can't really understand what either one of them is saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when they do that, they're interrupting the person, not only their train of thought, but they're making it hard for their message to get out merely by the fact that you can't hear them. You can't hear the other side, the counterpoint. That's what they do. They interrupt. They keep you from getting your point out. That's not really making your argument. That's just keeping the other person from making theirs. So that's what they do. If you watch this guy Boris, who's the Trump surrogate, who's come out, every time they'll say something, and then when somebody says something doesn't agree, they start interrupting, they start over-talking over the person. If your point is that strong, make your statement, let your statement stand on its own, let the next person make their statement. But they know there's truth in what the other people are saying, so they interrupt them speaking, so you can't really hear them. All you hear is two people arguing and talking, and you can't really make it out too well. That's a tactic that they use.
And, you know, and the women flunkies.
Right.
You know,
they do the same thing.
They keep talking and talking and talking, and that's what they're trained to do and then they get away with it.
Right.
They say nothing, but they have they're like zeroing in on one thing, Donald Trump.
Right.
Because, they're so married to him and the stupidity, so they come off as being stupid, but, you know, they will do it all the time. They stay on that note. It's really, I still think he is Hitleristic. He is dangerous for this country. And now I'm serious. I thought that the first time when he was talking about, you know, different people, he has a Hitleristic mentality. Okay? And that may not be a word, but it is now.
Well, look what it is. You look at what his son did to you. His son's statement the other day about, about the bowl of Skittles. And, you know, if three of the Skittles were poisonous, would you grab a handful?
Mm.
Well, you know, Skittles Corporation came out and said, first of all, Skittles is candy. Refugees are people.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it's ironic that you use a bowl of Skittles, which are all different colors. Well, you could just say that. You can make the same point about a bowl of Altoids, which are all white.
Yeah.
But the imagery that he chooses to use is a bowl of a diverse color. A bowl of diverse candies and colors.
Come on, he thought it was really funny.
So this is the thinking that they have. This is Donald Trump Jr. This is the one who talked about they'd be warming up the gas chambers, and, you know, the JDL, Jewish Defense League, and Jewish organizations said, you know, we try to refrain from, you know, we find the usage of the gas chamber offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, perhaps that wasn't what he meant. You know, you remember that from the old movie, send somebody to the gas chamber. But still, if you're speaking in the public scenario like that and your dad is running for president, you might want to be a little bit more receptive, a little bit more sympathetic.
Exactly, be informed, exactly.
Just
you
be
know?
a little bit more polite about things. These guys, mm-hmm. they don't need to be polite. They don't need to be concerned about anybody's feelings because that's what you do when you're rich. You don't
that's
need to be.
Right.
If you got millions of dollars, you don't need to worry about what somebody else thinks.
You don't even have to talk.
That's right. You don't even have to speak to them. All you got to do is point.
Yeah.
And then you choose. That's why Donald Trump comes off the way he does. He's used to being the boss.
Mm-hmm.
He's used to telling people what to do. Mm-hmm. He's used to having people jump when he says, jump, how high do you want me to jump? So now when you turn around and run for office, you got people asking you questions. And because you're talking the way you're talking, a lot of people say he tells it like it is. Yeah, he tells it like it is,
yeah.
Except for the fact that he's always talking about himself. he's the smartest, he's the best, I'm the smart guy, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this. Well, what is it?
He tells it like he is.
Right.
That's the same thing. He tells it like he is.
And you're exactly right, Monty. He does whatever, I mean, he has these people believing him.
I mean, you know,
it's really a lesson in human nature and how many of us are looking for something to follow, something to lead. Because if you really listen to what he says, even if I was supporting him, I would get tired of this guy bragging and talking about himself so much. Yeah, you're a millionaire, you're great. Now tell me what you're going to do and how you plan
exactly.
to do it.
Exactly, and never an agenda.
I know that you know because you're a smart guy, because you built these buildings, because you done this, you done that, you done. You sound like someone who's bragging then. You sound like one of them kids that's like, it's my ball, and we're going to play by my rules. I'm going to take my ball and leave. And what happens? You know, the dude who brought his ball, basically, okay, everybody said, all right, we want to keep playing, so we might as well let him make up these rules.
Yeah, but it's a game, you know, and people are going to say, but how are you going to play this game? Now, he hasn't said how with a plan
exactly.
that he has yet, okay? So the people who are for him have fallen right into his trap. And he's not even smart enough to have a trap, but he wants to control. He wants to be the king of the world. And if the world lets him do it, it's going to be a disaster.
Well said, Mike.
I feel it's going to be a landslide. That's all I can say. I hope.
Well, yeah, I hope it's going to be a landslide, too. We need to get our people out to vote
and
make sure that voting percentage of black people that comes out is like up in the 90s like it was for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we watched the online. Mom would watch the other night the Black Tie Dinner, the Phoenix Awards,
right.
of the annual legislative conference of the Congressional Black Caucus. For those of you who don't know,
the
annual legislative conference is about a four-day-long event of various workshops and brain trusts and things like that that report on the state of black America. And it's put together by the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation with the support of the Congressional Black Caucus. And this is to let people know what's going on and where we are in black America, things that are happening, different opportunities out in the world, things, how we can get our agenda for what we need to create opportunities for African Americans in this country. And the president each year has come and been the keynote speaker at the Black Tie Dinner, the Phoenix Awards, where they recognize various members of the community for their contributions. And so the president always gives a keynote speech. We watched it Saturday night online here, it was his last address. You know, we've been talking so much, we ran out of time. Well, we burned it up.
Yeah.
So we only have 90 seconds, but I will say we'll talk
right?
about that again next week. But it was a great thing, and it was Barack Obama's last Congressional Black Caucus speech. Well, I guess we got to go because we have about a minute. We have some juicy topics. We'll have some more juicy ones next week. Mr. Gilman, thanks for calling in and being the co-host, legendary newsman Wayne Gilman.
Thank you very much, Dr. Payne and Mrs. Payne, excuse me. the former Mrs. Payne, Kay Thompson.
I prefer Kay Thompson. Thank you very much.
And that is Mr. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman, our co-host. I am the other co-host, Eric Payne, Citizen Payne Online, also known as the son
The
one, the only. You are, lady.
But join us next week for another exciting show of Kay Thompson Live. And believe me, we are going to still stay on the political trail. And we'll be letting you know exactly what's going on in Washington and outside of Washington. But vote. Register to vote and vote.
Okay. Join us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. for the show. And our shows are archived if you want to listen. Thanks for joining in. We look forward to you next week. We're going to be recapping the debate that's going to happen on Monday and much more. We'll be paying attention to the shootings. Take care. We'll see you again next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.